Welcome to the Deep Practice Podcast, where we will share tips, stories, and strategies that help bring power into your discipleship process. I'm your host, Becky Shabelsky. Today on the Deep Practice Podcast, I get to introduce you to Father Dave Nuss. So welcome, Father Dave.
Becky, I'm so glad to be with you and joining in conversation with our listeners.
Yeah, so I am so thankful that you're joining us today, and you get to be my conversation partner for not only today, but moving forward, you're going to continue joining us on the Deep Practice Podcast as a co-host, sharing the conversation and helping us dig into this really interesting and a very important topic.
Well, we've discovered a real power and benefit of deep practice in the living out of our Christian faith. And I know that we're really excited to share that with others.
Yeah, I'm excited. And I'm even more excited that you're going to help us have the conversation. So as we dive in, let's just start with a little bit about who you are and where you serve. Just some beginning comments to help our listeners get to know you a little bit better.
Yeah, thank you. I'm a Catholic Christian priest serving as a pastor in the city of Toledo. My career has been a little unconventional. In fact, my life has been a little unconventional.
It's more interesting that way.
Well, there is a lot of variety in the journey that God has set forth before me, and variety in multiple places and multiple homes, different places growing up. I attended four different grade schools, two different high schools, two different universities, and have developed real gifts for transition. And I feel at this moment in time, the Lord is inviting me to a stability that I haven't experienced before. My current residence and my current assignment as a pastor is the single longest place that I have ever lived for any one time in my life, in my entire life. Hmm. And that's now at 8 years.
Wow.
So there's a deeper sense, an emerging sense of home and identity that for which I'm grateful. I've been a priest for an ordained minister for 27 years this June. It has gone so fast. And my ministry has been in parish work in some different locations. Some of it has been in administrative work in different locations. And some of it has involved additional graduate studies that took me to Washington, D.C., and to Europe as well for a period of time.
Okay. So you have had a very full life, as you said, of many transitions and a lot of variety. So you're bringing so much to the table today as we begin. And I guess I want to go back to our last episode where our listeners first heard your name. The founder of Go and Do Discipleship, Bob Beer, was sharing his story as he hit a roadblock with the deep practice tools not quite being used how he was expecting them to be used. And he mentioned that there was this priest that gave him a call, and you were that guy. So we're so glad that you called Bob. But even before that, how did you and Bob meet? And when did you first hear about Go and Do Discipleship?
Bob and I share a mutual friend, and it was really his genius and his inspiration. We certainly understand this is God's hand guiding us together, who brought Bob and I together in order that we could continue or initiate a conversation, that this mutual friend was convinced that I would have great interest in the work that Bob was doing to fuel and facilitate discipleship and infuse vitality into churches. And he was convinced that Bob would find in me a pastor eager for some new creative genius to apply to my own leadership ministry. And this mutual friend was absolutely correct in both instances. When I had the opportunity to first meet Bob and he shared his story, his journey, as well as the tools that had been developed for this task, this really important task of advancing God's kingdom, it immediately excited me. And my mind raced to applications that these tools would be able to provide for me as a pastor to help me to grow in effectiveness in the proclamation of God's kingdom and the betterment of people that I'm privileged and honored and humbled to serve.
So you met Bob through a mutual friend, and he shared the tools with you. And so just tell us, help us to take that journey with you. You get the tools in your hands, and what happened first?
You know, I might step back from that in this way first, that as a pastor, I'm tasked with helping people. So that task is to do triage in a way, to assess the situation correctly and as quickly as possible, and then to provide whatever routing is best for the assistance of the particular person or the particular group of people, families and otherwise. And I must say that there are common crises or common needs or common struggles or common challenges. And of course, common means I deal with them too. Mm-hmm. I get worried. I get anxious. I have read the scriptures. I have prayed them. I have asked for certain challenges and certain adversities to be lifted, to be taken away, to be healed in the root. And some of them I haven't, on a personal level, let alone on a professional level, felt adequately equipped mm-hmm. for bringing this about. And there would be sincere effort in pastoring, for sure, a desire to help, and then a feeling, a longing of, I wish I were able to be more effective. Mm-hmm. And the effectiveness begins with my own self. I wish I were able to be released from some of the struggles that are just kind of deeper ones that cause havoc or cause disturbance or cause disruption or interject discomfort or cloud confidence and clarity, those kind of things. And what Bob presented to me was his own journey of coming to discover some tools or pathways in his own life that has brought about this for him, which first was really attractive to me.
Yeah,
I want some of that in my own life. And then the application for what I do as a pastor was super exciting. All of a sudden, opportunities emerging before me where I can be far more helpful to people who seek assistance from me and from our ministry team.
Yeah, absolutely. So you get these tools in hand then, and you're experiencing this this sort of wonder, and you're being drawn in by Bob's own story of how God was meeting him in the midst of using these practices and bringing about greater freedom. And so what did you do? Where did you start?
I started with myself and said, I'm going to commit to using the tool as part of my own personal spiritual practice or my spiritual discipline. I'm going to add them to my discipline. I'm going to see if indeed they bring forth the freedom, the liberation that I was seeking initially in regards to worry or fear or anxiety. And the tools are designed to first help identify the sources of that, then to select, you know, one at a time, to be working on that. It's sort of developing a a practice where it's less of having to keep a post-it note before me and more with time of a reflex of how to respond when mm-hmm. I'm feeling anxious or feeling worried or feeling fearful. And what I noticed is that I was experiencing benefits and success. Blessings were being applied by means of commitment to practicing in this new way for me. And with that excitement, I shared that with colleagues in ministry who are a part of the parish that we serve as leaders. And I think I invited them. I don't think I made them. we'll have to bring one or two of them onto the show and find out the truth. My version is I persuaded them to try this themselves, that we would actually do this together as a leadership team, as a small church, right? And simply share the experience of how do we encounter Christ in this process, and what's happening, and how are we different individually, and then how might the Holy Spirit, the Lord, the giver of life, be asking us to use these tools with our community, with the community of believers, the parish, the church that we serve. That was the progression.
Yeah. So you had a personal experiment to start out, and you had your own personal list of worries and concerns. You had to be very honest with yourself and actually make the list.
Yes.
And as you practiced, you found that those items were being removed from the list. They were no longer weighing you down.
And, yes.
And so then you invite your colleagues and fellow leaders into the experiment, and they begin finding similar results. Is that right?
Yes, that is exactly correct. There was an excitement that we shared, a renewal that the Lord was giving to us by means of this, and then shared experience was encouraging to one another. Yeah. It's working, it's helping, and we could give testimony. Mm-hmm. I mean, effectively, that's what we were doing to each other, giving testimony of how grace, God's free gift of self and power, God's power, was being actualized in ways that we had wanted, in some cases for a long time. And it was happening, and we could give testimony to that and rejoice in that experience.
And so that enthusiasm and joy naturally was bubbling up over outside of that leadership group, and it was a natural progression then to think about how to invite the larger congregation into the same practice. And so on the last episode, that's when you called Bob and said, hey, this is what we're thinking. This is what we're going to do. So tell us a little bit about that part of the story.
Yeah. The Spirit just moved us, and I would say collectively us as a leadership team, to consider ways to share this with the parish, to bring about a renewal in their lives, and to bring about invigoration within the parish itself. How do you increase the vitality? Or using biblical terms, how do we increase faith, hope, and love? Increase it, not as concept, but as lived reality. Mm-hmm. There's nothing more persuasive than a Christian who is alive in faith, hope, and love. Nothing more persuasive, as it just exudes from themselves. And so we were seeking to bring that about. And I felt movement of the Spirit to delve deeper into one practice and to really seek to have that become an acquired reflex. Mm-hmm. Then to do more of a survey, if you will, and have the opportunity to taste several practices and fall short of having that become a habit. So I was more interested in let's take one and let's delve deep and let's be committed to it and really allow that to become a defining feature of how we're responding to Christ individually and as a parish. And then on top of that, taking a look at a natural time that the church herself gives to us, where there's heightened motivation for everybody to do something over and above what they usually do. And there are times in the year, in the church's calendar year, for that to happen. And one of those times in the Catholic Christian tradition that is especially recognized for more motivation to draw closer to Christ is the time before Easter, Lent. So there's this natural 6-week period of time. We also did this in Advent, this 4-week period of time, and it actually worked really, really well because it's typically a frenetic time and lots of anxiety, and Christmas comes and we're like, why am I so agitated? Why am I so edgy, you know? And so we looked at actually both of those periods of time in some different ways, creating different kinds of experiences. For our Advent experience, we framed it right before Advent began, which is the 4-week, effectively from Thanksgiving to Christmas. And I said to the community, in preaching in other ways, what kind of a Christmas would it be if on Christmas morning we were less anxious and less worried and less afraid? Is there anybody that would be interested in that? Well, that's kind of a natural desire for people. Yes, sign me up. How could we do that? Yeah. And in that instance, what we did is we drilled deep with the practice of relinquishment, as we call it with the tools, as a spiritual commitment, as a daily spiritual commitment. And we formed small groups and we trained leaders, and we had 8 or 10 small groups. We had maybe 120 participants or so this way, who were meeting weekly for 4 weeks as a way of heightening accountability, sharing experience, testimony, being encouraged and supported, and practicing together the steps. Then the following Lent, we did it differently, that instead of organizing small group leaders and having small groups where the experience was primarily administered and had, what I did was a different concept, just trying something differently. And so I said to the congregation, instead of opening up the gym and having you come in and me leading you in practice, say for basketball or for volleyball, I'm going to open up the church mm-hmm. and we're going to practice relinquishment. Mm-hmm. We're going to practice this biblical prescription for lessening fear, worry, and anxiety. And if you're interested in coming, I'm going to lead the practice. So in that case, I let her practice weekly during Lent, okay, opening the doors. And it was the same scale. There were about 120 people who had come to practice. And the concept there was to have time for individual instruction, and then a group experience that sort of culminated the evening. And the individual instruction was easy to do because our campus is large. So you can, here's what you do. You go anywhere you want to do. You'll hear the sound. Everybody will come back into the church and we'll do group practice together. So very different concepts, both with very effective results.
So, and at the same time, you were also preaching on your normal set worship times, giving your homily on relinquishment as well. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah. All of the preaching was orientated towards that theme.
So they were, your people were getting to hear just that message from yes, various angles, perspectives. You know, it was being drilled down upon for those 6 weeks. And then at the same time, then you're offering another way for people to not just hear the material, but to now really see it. So you're there showing and demonstrating. So they're seeing you and they're seeing one another. And as of course, they're doing the practice. So you are kind of experimenting, it sounds like, with, you know, incorporating that hear, see, and do. For this period of 6 weeks.
Very much so, Becky. You summarized it perfectly. In addition to preaching, witnesses were given from various people, and a lot of work went into identifying people and helping people shape the testimony and have confidence in doing it, and within the context of liturgy as well, so that it was all, you know, it's worship. Call to worships that begin our weekly praise and worship of God on Sundays, that in the Catholic tradition we oftentimes refer to by the nickname of Mass. Mm-hmm. But time and again, coming at the encounter with Christ that worship is through that lens of relinquishment, or through the lens of the practice that the biblical instructions that help to lessen, and by God's grace, remove fear, worry, anxiety. Yeah, so we came at it a lot of different ways. There were written materials. There were encouraging notes that would be sent in a variety of different ways, just trying to coach people to stay the course,
yeah,
to give yourself over to it, to commit to it. And everything was packaged with the end in mind. You begin with the end in mind. And this particular end with the Lenten season was, what kind of an Easter would it be if on Easter Sunday morning, that fear that has just gripped me, or that worry that has just dogged me, that anxiety that has just relentlessly assailed me, what kind of an Easter would it be over the course of these 6 weeks of Lent if that was gone on Easter Sunday morning? And the reality is that the Lord doesn't want us to live in fear. My goodness, He frequently is saying to be not afraid. And the biblical prescriptions are given to us. And Bob responded to the prompting of the Holy Spirit in his own life, and to assemble a group of people to help identify that prescription and to make it available for all.
And what I love about this story, I mean, it's so compelling to, you know, just hear the different steps and the ways that you were engaging with what God was offering you in your own life, and how that flowed into your leadership team and then out into the larger congregation. But the best part of the story for me when I hear it is really 6 months, 9 months, 12 months later, when the stories begin trickling in about the fact that this has become this way of practicing relinquishment, of in the midst of daily life when I am floundering in fear and anxiety, that I know exactly what to do. Not only just know what to do, I'm going to call Father Dave at 3 a.m. when no. I am equipped with a practice that is, you know, available to me, that I have tried and that I know it works, so that when those experiences in real life smack me, because that's what it feels like sometimes when those anxieties arise, it just feels so intense. When that happens, I know exactly what to do and I am prepared to do it. And so as we wrap up today, I guess we just look forward in our next episodes to hear some of those stories that were coming in through your parishioners, with your leadership, and even your own and my own ongoing stories. That's the meat of it. You know, not just that we've heard, you know, a compelling message again, or that we've aligned our congregation, you know, in some really wonderful effort, but the fact that, what is the fruit? I mean, Scripture tells us we will be known by our fruit. Yes. And what is the fruit that is now evident? I can't wait to share some of those stories.
Absolutely, Becky. Thank you so much for the opportunity to just have the conversation and to share the fruit that we have experienced with others.
In our next episode, Father Dave and I will continue the conversation exploring stories of fruitfulness that result when we embrace a lifestyle of spiritual training utilizing deep practice. In the meantime, you can find us at www.deeppracticepodcast.com. Go ahead and subscribe now so you don't miss the next episode. And thanks again for joining us here on the Deep Practice Podcast. See you soon.